Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock MBA Podcast. Today's guest is Randall Pitch. This is actually the audio version of an interview I did with him, I don't know, 6 months ago or something like that. Really liked how it turned out, so I thought I would share it here for anybody who missed it the first time around. This is not the world's best audio quality, since recording on location is not my specialty, but I think it's an awesome interview, so I wanted to share it here anyway. Randall is the founder and CEO of a brand called Live Fit Apparel. If you are into the whole kind of fitness, gym wear kind of world, then you probably know it because it's a pretty big deal. But the reason why I wanted to talk to him more than that is because he is one of us. He comes from like the Orange County metalcore, hardcore kind of world, and actually used a lot of what he learned from being in a band to build the company. So that's kind of the angle that we focus on. But before I get into the episode, there are a few ways that you can support the show. The first thing you can do, which really helps us a lot, is to share it on social media. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, we don't care. Please share it on there if you like what you hear and tag us, tag me, the guest, tag Deanna. It really helps us a lot because the platforms really don't do much to promote the shows. Second thing you can do, if you really like us, is to buy some merch. There's a link to that in the show notes. Thing number three you can do if you really, really, really like us is you can support the show on Patreon. There's a link to that in the description as well. Patrons get every show a week early. There is a chance for me to review your band or podcast or YouTube channel or any other project you want to send my way. So if you want to check that out, hit the link in the show notes. And with that, let's get into the show.
I think I first heard of you, I think it was on Mikey Taylor and Eric's podcast. Yeah. And I didn't know anything about you, saw the picture or something. And at first I thought you were one of these like Instagram phonies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like another one of these Instagram brands, you know, with a bunch of paid followers and a rented Lambo or whatever, you know. But, you know, I was kind of digging deeper and saw that you knew like John from Winds of Plague and some other people. Yeah. And it's like, okay, I guess he's the real deal.
Yep.
And, you know, anytime one of my people makes it, I'm excited.
Like I said, 30 in-house employees, about 17 brand ambassadors and pro athletes combined. So we do about an average of 150 to 200 orders a day. We do have retail accounts that I choose and approve to wholesale to. And we have stores in Japan, Australia, all over Europe, pretty much all over the world. I think I did my first million my first year or two, you know, when I only had three employees. Now we have 30, you know, so we've scaled quite a bit.
Just to kind of back up a little bit, I know you talked about some of the other like podcasts I've heard you on about like being in a band when you were like in high school and how that taught you some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Could you maybe go into a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, I started playing drums in middle school, you know, obviously in like regular band, jazz band and stuff. And I started getting into hardcore music and straight edge in high school, just with a couple local dudes that I've met. And I still keep in touch with today, of course. I remember in high school, I just wanted to be in a band and got together with a couple of guitar players. And it wasn't anything crazy, you know, but then it got serious later in the year when I started joining or joined another band, and they were a lot bigger. It was One Mark, One Mission. They're actually from here in Orange County. We toured with Suicide Silence. We toured with Winds of Plague. That's all I know, Johnny.
Okay.
And then Armed for Battle, AFB, Tony. Tony's actually like one of my best friends.
Oh, okay.
I was talking this morning. He actually owns Gold English with me.
Oh, nice.
Downstairs, yeah. Being in a band, you know, you got to deal with a lot of merchandise, right? You know, when you're in the scene and you're doing your thing, you don't think that you're running a business, but you are legitimately running a business. You're selling clothes in exchange for currency to pay for your tour or your band, pay the members, because everyone likes to think you want to do this for fun, which it should be, but you got to get paid as well. You got to get food on the table when you're dealing with merch and touring and all that stuff. You got to make money. I think that taught me, especially in high school, because I would run the merchandise for all the bands every time, because I did graphic design in high school as well. So I'll do the designs, run the merch, and, you know, go get the blanks, find the silk screeners. I didn't know until people were like, dude, how the fuck do you know where to go? You know, I'm like, oh shit. Because I've been doing this my whole life. You know, talking from like 14 years old till now, 31.
And it's like, if you can make any money off of fucking hardcore, which is like the hardest business in the world, if you can make any money off of that, like, you could crush it if you just apply yourself.
Yeah. Dude, the designs from that cover of the hardcore are pretty dope though.
They are.
Like a varsity letter type.
Totally.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, everything in streetwear in the past, like, I don't know, 10 years is, I mean, not everything, but a huge chunk of it is like borrowed from the stuff I was into when I was a kid, like graffiti, skateboarding, and hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like the foundation of pop culture now.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, when you go to a hardcore show, and even like the local hardcore shows,
yeah,
and if these bands have merchandise, some of them are pretty fucking dope.
Yeah.
You know, they got some sick ass designs that you would see in big brands today, you know?
Sometimes I'll find some like Earth Crisis shirt from like 1993 or something and show it to her. They're like, this looks like hype streetwear.
Dude, yeah, no, for sure, for sure. The black and white in the back with like the crowd.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And, like, yeah. The story that with Lifted Apparel, it was never meant to be a clothing brand. Okay, so it's weird. It's funny. Like when you try to do that,
yeah,
it will never work. I've had this other brand called Ruckus Clothing I did in high school, and we sponsored hardcore bands, we sponsored rappers and hip-hop artists, mm-hmm. and all these other things, skateboarders too, and we had MySpace back in the day,
uh-huh.
but it was just like, you force feed it so much that it doesn't feel authentic,
yeah.
You know? There's no real story behind it, because it's like, what have I done, you know, who are you? But then again, it taught me how to do websites, all mm-hmm. this stuff, whatever. So then later on, when I started studying kinesiology in college, I became a personal trainer, and then I started running my own business. You know, I had a few clients, 50 clients, and I had trainers working under me. And I was like, you know what? I know the t-shirt game. Let's put some t-shirts on my clients' backs. Mm-hmm. Let's put some uniforms on my trainers so we can look professional and run a legit business. I wasn't even thinking like, where do I go? It just was natural. Like I already knew where to go, get the shirts, mm-hmm. get this, do this design, whatever, brand my whole company, had a website and all that stuff just from prior experiences. So once they started treating it like a brand in a sense, mm-hmm. I would sell merchandise to people that weren't my clients because it started catching on.
Those were branded Live Fit or?
Oh, so let me backtrack. So check this out. Live Fit was just a slogan for my personal training business. My personal training business was RP Fitness, so mm-hmm. for Randall Pitch. And then I just had the slogan Live Fit. And then I mocked up some designs and put Live Fit big. And we actually still sell that design today. And it really caught on. And then I invested $300 for a batch of shirts, right? Because shirts, they don't cost much to make when yeah. you get it in bulk and you silk screen it. So I got my first batch, and first, I gave it to my clients, or I gave it to them as an incentive when they re-signed with me or something, you know what I mean? Or like challenges or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they started rocking the shirts, and then they would put it on their social media, which was Facebook at the time. And then word just got out because people saw the designs, like, hey, man, that's a dope shirt. You know, the Live Fit slogan, all this, where can I get one? And that's where it's like, okay, light bulb struck my head. I'm like, you don't work out with me, but I could sell you one.
Yeah.
We meet up in the parking lot, or, you know, if you're not local, hey, I'll put it up on this store now. You can go buy it. So then that's kind of where it really, really popped off. So I started this whole company with $300 and no investments, no nothing, no debt ever.
So this is all bootstrapped.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
No fucking debt, nothing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, because I was already making a good living in personal training.
I see. Right?
So I had good income, good time, but I saw this opportunity, you know, this window. But when I invested that $300, when I got that investment back, because when you sell the shirt, you know, you're making your margin, you're doubling up. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't spend it. I would just throw it to restock those SKUs, and then I would have enough to make another design. One design turned into two designs turned into four. All of a sudden, I got like four t-shirts, a hoodie, and a hat. I'm like, dude, I got a whole line, you know?
Right.
So then, yeah, it's just all started with $300.
What I think a lot of people feel like they have to have it all figured out before they like press go.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's intimidating because it's like, I can't plan the whole empire, but you don't have to, like, mm-hmm. just make your first batch of shirts.
Right.
And if people like it, cool. And if they don't, yeah. cool. Make another batch. Try again.
Exactly. Yeah. There's never going to be a right time. If you're waiting for somebody to tell you when to do it, you probably shouldn't do it.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of trial and error, and I can honestly speak like that's the truth. You know, when I say I'm still doing trial and error here, you know,
I'm sure there's times where you come out with a SKU that you think is going to be awesome and then it eats shit.
Oh yeah, no, right? For sure. And we're like, dude, this thing is fucking tight. Why isn't right. buying it? You know?
Yeah. So even though you've been doing this for 15 years, like you still really never know.
Yeah. You really never know. It's just having the confidence to do it, you know, because I mean, that's the first step. And once you do it, you're already ahead of the game for than these other guys that are just waiting around. You mm-hmm. know, you might as well do it. And you'll never know if you don't do it. It sounds so simple, but for me, I just had the attitude where, dude, I had nothing to lose.
Right.
You know, and I want to know what's on the other side. Let me do it. If I fail, fuck it. Then I know that, okay, I'm not going to do that again. But you will never know if you don't try it.
How the fuck does a new brand stand out from the noise? You know, LiftFit's a relatively new brand. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you stand out from the 9 fucking million Instagram brands out there?
You got to have a story behind it. There's got to be something, a why this brand was born. Because like I said, if you force it and you just say you have this mission, okay, cool, what the fuck have you done, right? When I did it, I had a story. I was a physique competitor before I had the brand. I was a bodybuilder before I had the brand. I was a personal trainer before I had the brand. I changed hundreds of people's lives. Mm-hmm. I had that first, which gained traction first before I had LiftFit apparel. So like our mission now with LiftFit is, yeah, we're a clothing brand, but we're here to promote a healthier fitting lifestyle, you know, with active sports and, you know, modern sports and stuff like that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people start with like designing some shirts and then kind of back into like the story.
Like, I want to do this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I designed 4 shirts. Now, how do I create a story that like sort of justifies them?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's not authentic and you can smell it a mile away and then it just never works.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
Well, I guess switching gears then, you know, there's so many great things about the scene that I mentioned, like kind of just that attitude of saying, fuck it, let's just try this and see what happens. And, you know, doing all these things yourself. But there are some negative sides to it. So many people that are like entitled and complaining and making excuses. And that's such a big part of like hardcore, is pointing the finger at somebody else, cops or the government or teachers. It's kind of a personal mission of mine is to like attack that kind of thinking because it holds people back.
Yep.
There's a part of your story that I think ties into that, which is basically the Cambodian angle. There's all these refugees from places like Cambodia and Vietnam that went through horrible shit that no American can ever even possibly imagine.
Right.
these people are starting all kinds of businesses. You know, they're grinding it out. They're hustling. They're making it happen. Mm-hmm. So if you're an able-bodied American, like born in America, like what is the fucking excuse?
You had none.
Like what is the excuse? Can you talk a little bit about kind of like where you came from? Because I think that is a big part of your story.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up on the east side of Long Beach, you know, single mother. My dad was always around, but they divorced when I was three. So he lived in Cerritos, so I would visit him so often. But I was, like I said, born and raised on the east side of Long Beach, which was like prominently, you know, heavy with gang activities. And,
well, let me back up. Most people, I think, when they see an Asian person, they think engineer or something like that.
Right.
Which is, you know, obviously that is one large group of Asians.
Right.
But then, you know, you are talking about like hood shit and they're going, wait a minute, what? But if you know anything about Cambodians, that actually makes total sense.
Yeah.
Can you just kind of explain that?
Exactly. Yeah. So the stereotypical Asian, I guess, we don't fall into that category. And especially if you're from Long Beach or from like Southern California, you know, like the Cambodians, you know, we're all grew up in rough areas. We came here as refugees. I'm first generation, so I was born here, fortunately. But a lot of the other people that fled from the war came here with nothing. So they were on like housing, Section 8, stuff like that, getting help from government, had no place to go. So they started gangs and stuff. So and then being different here, they would obviously get rival or have rival gangs too. So like the Mexicans, the blacks, the Asians, you know, they were all not getting along, and Long Beach is a melting pot. You know, this is when I was a kid, you know, you just grew up knowing where to go, where not to go, who to hang out with and stuff, you know. But luckily enough for me, when I was growing up, I found skateboarding, you know, so that kind of took me in another direction. Cause I had friends that I still have today that are gangbangers or old gangbangers, you know, and they took another route. I'm like, fuck, you're lucky you survived, dude. After all the shit they told me they did, I'm like, fuck, dude. You know, so I got to thank skateboarding, because Long Beach, like I said, is a diverse culture and it's heavy in skateboarding too. We have like Cherry Park, which is like a famous park that all the skaters go to. But when we go to these skate locations, there's all kinds of races, all whatever. We didn't care because we were so interested in skateboarding, you know? So I think that actually like got me and saved me from being hood and, you know, going to go gangbang or something. So,
yeah.
But the Cambodians from Southeast Asia, the Cambodians, the Vietnamese, Laos and all those peeps are, you know, it's not like what you think, like the Japanese or Chinese, you know, like you see in the movies and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, what was it, like 20% of the Cambodian population was killed in the war?
Yes.
It was like fucking outrageous amount of people.
The recorded number was actually more than the Jewish Holocaust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a big country.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. And then half or the second most populated place with Cambodians now is Long Beach. Mm-hmm. I think that's still current after Cambodia. Yeah. You know, like I didn't know nothing better, you know, and then when I started putting this stuff out, people would stereotype and say, like, you know, I'll see dumb comments like, oh, people must have rich parents. Like,
right.
Oh, well, my fucking parents came here fucking running away from bullets from y'all people, you know? It's crazy, dude. Like, the stories that I hear from my parents, like, fuck, it's nutty. But we didn't have nothing. We came from nothing. No money, nothing, you know? So when people are, like you said, being here, I can't do this. Man, motherfucker, you got two arms, two legs, dude. You're fucking lucky. You have... You know what I mean? It's safe outside.
Speak English.
Yeah, like, you speak English. You got the same ability I have. Go fucking do the work, dude.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's an aspect of, like, the scene that I don't like.
Yeah.
And people focusing on the barriers, what they can't do. And it's like, if you just put that energy into doing shit, this wouldn't be a problem.
And I think the scene likes to judge people. And I don't know if you can agree with that, but they like to judge people. So I feel like they may want to do it, but are kind of embarrassed because, oh, what are my homies going to think? For me, I didn't even give a fuck, dude. I just, you know what? I'm going to disappear for a bit. Fuck you guys if you're going to support me or whatever. Because, you know, it's just kind of a thing that ran through my head every single night.
I mean, I'm sure you get some of that, though, right? Or maybe not anymore. I don't know. But at a certain point, like, it's the tall poppy syndrome. Anyone that, you know, rises up a little bit, there's certain people that want to cut them down.
Oh, yeah.
And when you started making some noise, I'm sure that you got plenty of that.
Oh, yeah. All the time. It's funny until... You know, if like I'm normally, I would just be like, you know, fuck it, then I'm gonna cut you out because it's just stress.
Yeah.
But then some of these guys, they just didn't know what I go through, because when you work in 9-to-5 or like a regular type of job, that's what you do every single day. Mm-hmm. My every single day is different. you know, 365 days a year is fucking different.
And there's probably not a second, other than maybe when you're with your family or something, but there's probably not a second you're not thinking about.
Exactly.
Like, the pressure is all on you.
Yeah.
I have. Like, if you fuck up, those people in the warehouse are out of a job.
Mm-hmm. And the people in the warehouse have families.
Right.
They got kids, you know, so it's, fuck, yeah, there's a lot of pressure. So they want to finally take, obviously my close friends, I didn't understand, kind of like chill them around. They're like, fuck, you know, it's an eye opener for them.
To anybody who maybe feels like they might sort of be interested in business, but maybe they're scared of some of the stuff you were talking about, what would you say to that person?
I would say that it's going to be hard regardless, but everyone's going to have their own battles, you know? You know, just don't be afraid, because it's not like it's not going to kill you. You know, it's going to just force you to learn. You're going to have to learn.
So you have some, you know, you have, what did you say, like 20 like ambassadors and stuff that you work mm-hmm. with, and you've probably been through lots more than that.
Right.
What are some pointers, like if someone has a small project, how do they reach out to like influencers, ambassadors? How do you get these people to give you the time of day when you're still small?
You know what? There's a new study now that's out with social media that the people with a bigger following are losing that connection with their audience mm-hmm. because of multiple brands that they're posting. The trust is getting lost, mm-hmm. you know? So the smaller influencers, you could say, with less of a following are actually having more of an impact. Like, we had athletes and ambassadors who had like millions of followers, you know, to now that we have, you know, ambassadors with not even half that, but mm-hmm. we're still doing crazy numbers, you know, for us. So this is crazy, because like the data that we have in our back end, obviously a lot of people don't know, you know, the ambassadors and athletes, what they bring in and contribute as far as like revenue wise, because they have a code and whatnot, is only 8% total. Mm-hmm. You know, the rest comes from my marketing and myself, just because of social media and how much or how tied I am to the brand. So when we pick like athletes and ambassadors, sometimes we don't even care about the sales. We just want to make sure that the image is portrayed, you know, it's not marketing in a sense. Yeah, you know, we're looking at for people who just are authentic and real and are just loyal to stick to what they say, mm-hmm. you know, because there's some people that just hop around brands. Like one day they say this is the best thing in the world, and
right,
the next
right.
day they say this is the best thing. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, right. Why, motherfucker?
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like, I don't know, a year or two ago or something like that, you were, I don't want to say like backing away from your personal brand, but maybe trying to push Live Fit a little bit more. And then you mm-hmm. realize, like, you know what? I guess people want me to be out there more.
Yep, you're totally right. I wanted to distance myself and kind of just push the brand as a brand, but every time I was active and do the thing, the data shows with sales, yeah. it would spike up, you know, and there's a direct correlation. We were like, dude, this can't be right. Mm-hmm. So we fucking tested it. When I went to Spain, whatever, I let my dude handle it, and they didn't do anything wrong, but it's just, if I'm not talking about it, mm-hmm. the sales kind of just plummeted, you know, regardless if the athletes promote or not.
It makes sense to me though, because people don't want to support companies. They want to support other people.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody doesn't give a shit about Live Fit, but they care about Randall,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. You know, that's why Nike pays athletes tens and millions of dollars. Like, they wouldn't pay those people if they could get away with not paying them, right?
Right, right.
And it's because they want to support individual humans. And now with social media being what it is.
Exactly. And if you build your social media and audience to a certain point, you can start expanding and doing different brands. Like myself, you know, so now I have Top Red, this other brand mm-hmm. that represents more of like our culture, you know, with tattoos, the scene, hardcore music, tattoos and all that stuff, you know. So it's a little different from Live Fit, but it's still an influence from myself. And they're two completely separate brands, but they're both crushing it.
Cool. Well, I think that's a good note to end on. Yeah. So thank you again for doing this. And I guess anything in particular you want to plug beyond just the brand in general?
I might actually be starting a record label. Or actually, yeah, I'm starting a record label.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, starting with the guys from lead singer of Lionheart and Robin, the singer of Stick to Your Guns.
Oh, cool.
So I don't know if you want to put that out there. It's called Concrete.
Okay. Is there anything to look at yet?
Not yet, because Lionheart's on tour right now, but we're about to do the merch launch and the website launch pretty soon. So the name is all kind of like designed and just ready to get the trigger pulled.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.